I've never liked Subway, so I haven't gone that often.
Neither. I used to be obsessed, and now I kind of lost my taste for it. I ate it too much. Like when I first moved out, when we were living together, I had Subway like exclusively that whole time. Like 6 months of nothing but Subway, pretty much all like that for 6 months.
No wonder you moved back home.
Welcome to Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Portland, Oregon, you are my co-host, Richard Wally.
You said that. That was like between excited and angry. and I'm confused on which one.
I'll let you decide.
You're Cassidy Robinson, and you're coming to us from the middle of traffic in California? Is that what I'm getting?
Straight from it.
Yeah, you're from Garden Grove.
Garden Grove. I made a mistake. I've made several mistakes this weekend. Well, okay, first traffic today. So I'm driving home, and this will mean nothing to anybody but except for LA people, but I'm on the 5. Basically, from the point in which you enter that specific freeway to all the way to Downey, which is something like, I would say 15 to 20 mile stretch, it's just always slow through there. So I'm like, you know what? I've never actually clicked on these buttons on my GPS that try to reroute me whenever I hit this stretch. So I'll try it today. What the hell? And I end up like God knows where in the middle of East LA and off roads. And I end up on stop go traffic where I was literally like sitting for 10 second stretches, not moving. And then when it would move again, I would only move like one car length. And that lasted for about 35 minutes, going a half a mile.
Sounds like traffic. I don't miss that at all. The 5 can get pretty bad around here, but we try to avoid it as much as possible.
I don't know what I mean. There's a lot of construction over there, so I think that might have to do why it gets slowed down. But I will never, ever reroute from my GPS ever again. Because
Is it like an actual GPS device, or is it like Google Maps?
No, it's a GPS. It's a Montebello that I hang from my window. I got it right before I moved here. I don't know how to get fucking anywhere without it. People always ask me, how did you get here? I don't know. I followed my GPS and turned when it told me to turn.
Google Maps is usually not bad, and it actually tells you traffic, so.
Yeah, well, mine's supposed to, that's why they reroute you, but it doesn't know that it's a bad idea. It doesn't know when something's worse than where you already are. So, that's what ended up happening. I mean, I was driving parallel when I was on the street, like, regular, city street. I was driving parallel to the 5, and I was watching it still the same speed it was going when I was on it, just zooming past me. Just watching it to my left, going, why did I get off? but yeah, so that's me failing at adulthood. You went to CthulhuCon.
Yeah, I did. I had a much more pleasant time. We talked with writers and publishers and played a bunch of games and went to a bunch of panels, and it was a really lovely time. This is put on by the same people who do the Lovecraft Film Festival, and it's their first annual, and yeah, no, it was a blast, I must say.
They summon Cthulhu to be the keynote speaker?
Well, we can't talk about that. And I mean, if I did tell you about it, you would go insane. So
just from that. The details.
Yeah. So
just from a physical description. My brain wouldn't comprehend the magnificence and awe and horror
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm glad you get it. So, right. No, there was a bunch of people. We got to talk with, I got to talk with William H. Pugmire a little bit. He's like a big name in the, Cthulhu writing, like specifically in the Lovecraftian exterior mythos kind of building people. I got to speak to some more of the people at the, from the Bizarro world. Specifically, I got to talk to, the publisher.
Bizarro Superman.
Yeah, Bizarro Superman, no. I got to speak to the publisher of Eraserhead Press here in Portland, and she's really, really nice. And
cool.
Got to talk to another lady from Fireblog Press, and she was nice as well. It was just an overall lovely time. I got to talk to a bunch of writers, and mm-hmm. we spent too much money and bought prints, and what can I say?
So what you do at a con.
Yeah, but I prefer these ones. Like, I like, don't get me wrong, comic conventions are great.
Yeah.
But, like, I like the more, like, specific niche, more, like, uber nerd conventions.
Right.
It's just like, not as, like, shoving pop culture and consumerism down your throat. This one is really about love, and I really like that.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about the extra versus, like, the kind of, side catalog stuff from H.P. Lovecraft writing. If people even know who H.P. Lovecraft is, horror writer from the early 20th century American, they might not know that people still continue to write in his mythologies, like, as if, like, J.R.R. Tolkien, like, if people were still writing about Middle-earth and using his mythology. And I suppose that probably did happen to some extent outside of the realm of fan fiction.
The one thing that I guess the cautionary thing, because that's a misnomer, is that people all write within his mythos, but that's not always completely true. A lot of like the bigger writers have started their own, so it's like in a similar style, but very much their own thing.
Right.
So it's more influenced by.
Well, the only reason I knew about like these compendium or side pieces or whatever continuation mm-hmm. is because I had a roommate who was obsessed and he had all these books and he was like, oh, and I was like, Lovecraft's been dead. And he's like, oh, no, these are other people. And I'm like, oh, that's a thing. Okay, that's interesting.
No. You had it right the first time.
Yeah.
He's been writing post.
He's still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Writing from the depths of Cthulhu Hell, whatever that's called. Well, we should probably get into the show. I don't think I mentioned it at the top of the show, but we are going to be reviewing Unfriended, Ex Machina, and we are not going to be reviewing The Hunt, which I assigned in the Netflix homework, or you assigned in the Netflix homework last week, because life happens.
I think you did.
No, that one was yours.
No, I don't know. Who cares? You assumed it. Yeah, who cares? I think we both mutually picked it, and so that's why it's confusing.
Yeah, it's probably the case. But let's go ahead and get into the movie news. We have a little bit of it here. What do I want to start with? What do I want to start with here? Adam Sandler offended a few actors on the set of his first Netflix-exclusive movie. We talked a little bit about how Netflix is producing these movies direct to stream with Sandler. I think he had a 5-picture deal, something like that. And he's making a Western parody called The Ridiculous Six. And he had some extras who are Native American. And they walked off set due to some of the humor, some of the jokes they weren't prepared for. Apparently, there's a gag in the movie where somebody insults somebody else, calling them beaver breath. And then one of the Native Americans is supposed to stand up and say yes, like answering to it because that happens to be their name.
Hmm.
So that was a point of controversy, but also they were sort of offended by the laziness in the production design, and like they're supposed to be Apache, but the actual clothes they're wearing and nothing is accurate. It's all just kind of, you know, based upon movie style stuff that we know. The use of feather is wrong, that kind of stuff. So just a combination of cultural insensitivity and this beaver joke caused a number of these actors to walk off set. some people have come out to defend Sandler, saying, I think Vanilla Ice tweeted today, this isn't Dances with Wolves, this is a comedy. He's in the movie.
Well, he's also playing Mark Twain in the movie, so.
Right, right. And then some people have, you know, I mean, it's Sandler's sort of an easy target. He's sort of, a lot of people love to hate him at this point.
And especially right now, I feel like there's a big
backlash,
ball of hate against him. So he's an easy, easy target for sure.
So, I mean, do you have an opinion?
Not really, to be honest. Could I see Adam Sandler being, you know, going too far? Yes. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just the breaking point too, and the sign of our times, because,
yeah,
you know, this is the first time Native Americans can actually say that and people will give a shit and not go to the same John Wayne movie over and over again. So I don't really know. It's just, it's one of those situations where I just go, news article.
Right.
So,
well, it's also, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things. I think there's that you're talking about, that we might be at a cultural tipping point where, you know, sensitivity in general, cultural insensitivity is a little bit more poignant than it used to be, or a little bit more in the air, in the zeitgeist. And, you know, this is a story that if had this had happened in the 70s when Mel Brooks was making Blazing Saddles, nobody would have even heard this story until, like, you know, 30 years later. It'd be, oh, little known fact, there was actually a big walkout by some of the Native American actors. And we'd all scratch our chins and go, very interesting. And well,
It would have been buried, too.
Yeah.
Mel Brooks in the height of his career. Like,
right. And I'm not comparing this movie. I haven't seen it yet. So maybe it's Blazing Saddles brilliant. Who knows? But what I think is interesting is there's a movie, Blazing Saddles, which is also a Western parody, which is also incredibly un-PC.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I guess it's really hard to say unless we actually see the movie.
In context,
where the joke is. It doesn't sound like a funny joke. Well, and, you know, he has a pretty bad track record as far as being funny.
Well, are they making fun of the movies, or are they making fun of the people? And is there a difference? There are some tougher questions to answer. And sometimes, like, I don't know, on the whole PC debate, I mean, it always depends on, like, I don't know. Like, it depends on the day, it almost feels like. Some days I'm like, yes. And then sometimes I'm like, this feels really contrived. And so I never know. So, like, more and more, I'm just always like, I'm not sure.
I mean, this is a, Dave Chappelle did a bit on this, when one of his stand-up specials. He did a bit about how American Indians don't really have a voice in our society. They just don't. There's a lot of out-groups or minorities in America, but that's one that you don't hear about all that much. They don't, like, come out of the woodworks and make a point of saying we're offended or this isn't appropriate or whatever.
I don't know. I always heard a lot coming from the area we did, but I mean,
yeah, but you would hear it personally, like face to face. You wouldn't hear it in the news.
Oh, that's okay.
It never hits the wire.
I don't know. I've heard rant. It seems like they're, to me, it almost, I feel like I have, but it seems like whenever it's popular, like when Dancing with Wolves was out or something like that, or something that has something to do with Indians and Indian, like, culture becomes back up.
Right. Well, there was that big controversy about the Washington Redskins, and that's still under debate. It hasn't been settled yet. But yeah, so, I don't know, whatever. The movie, I really doubt it's going to be funny. I mean, regardless of all of this, you know, the joke stays, the joke leaves. And I'm not necessarily all that, I don't really care that they're using historical accuracy as far as, like, the use of feather and that kind of stuff, because it is just a dopey Adam Sandler movie.
Well, I mean,
And it could be making fun of inaccuracies in other movies. I mean, that, you know, there's something to be said about that. I just don't trust him. I don't, as a comedian at this point, I think he's just lazy. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on to the your news story. What was it?
So Adam Wingard, I'm after his entry in Your Next and also last year's The Guest. I'm intrigued by him as just a horror director, and because, you know, I love these kind of movies. He's been actually looked at to take on the a Death Note movie.
Yeah, which is based on a Japanese manga.
Right. I don't remember. There's like something about some like demon living in somebody, and like I forgot. I've read the synopsis like 1,000 times. And
right. As far as I can recall, I knew people who were into it when it was an anime. The basic idea is there's like a book that you write in, and when you write in it, it causes this demon to do things for you. So it's kind of like a superpower. But yeah, that's kind of the idea. And it's like this nerdy kid who gets a hold of it and ends up like, I don't know, it's kind of like a superhero thing meets a horror thing meets Cat in the Hat.
No, awesome. No, I've seen it, and it's been one of the ones I've thought about kind of like peeking into just a little bit, just because, well, it looks cool. Yeah. But,
and it was pretty well regarded by everybody who was into it.
Right. So specifically though, just, I could see his style lending to something bigger like this and kind of going, I mean, some of his take on the, specifically some of his, just his stylistic, how he uses his music, how he uses, he shoots things in a very kinetic way too, that has this weird, like it's almost like music, but it's like pictures. It's weird. I love it though. And in the guest specifically, you saw him kind of really evoke a lot of his like John Carpenter influence, and in a good way. And so, no, I'm super pumped.
Okay,
I'm actually just more pumped because he's doing something else.
Yeah.
The Death Note thing could be good, could be bad. I don't care, because I think that he'll take it in a good direction.
Sure.
Also, he's good on working on a budget.
Yes. And he's probably a cheap director since he's mostly only done indie so far. And it's at least halfway sort of in his wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he maybe hasn't done some of the bigger things, but specifically in The Guest, like there's a lot of big action scenes, and there's a lot of he uses atmosphere in a lot. And I thought it was a really cool movie. And a lot of people have said it's kind of like
underrated.
Well, not just underrated, but it's like a, it's sort of like a thriller meets a superhero movie meets a horror movie. It's very strange.
Right.
But in a really cool way, so.
Okay, last news story, if we want to call it that. What do you think about the Jared Leto Joker reveal? The world wants to know.
The world wants to know my opinion?
The world wants to know our opinion. What is Jabber and the Jones' position on Jared Leto's photo reveal as the Joker? He's been leaking this out a little bit. He took one kind of selfie that kind of looked a little bit like the cover of Killing Joke. It was really kind of hazy and fuzzy. And then I think he's released a few set photos of him just kind of with green hair, just chilling.
Yeah.
And now this is the first full photo we've seen that's like taken by a professional for promotional use.
Right.
And there was a huge backlash against it, mostly because he's covered in all of these, like, prison tats. It looks like prison tats meets, like punk rock tattoos of people who are super into Batman. and the Joker.
Right.
He has, like, metal teeth in, kind of like Marilyn Manson.
Well, he's kind of got a grill.
He has a grill. He's wearing one glove, like Michael Jackson. And he has a facial expression and eye makeup that makes him look a little bit like the guy from Prodigy.
I've seen a lot of, the other big popular thing right now is the Macaulay Culkin, screaming face kind of covers that they do
over. It's been meme fodder for sure.
Oh, that's for sure. And I've heard, I had a friend that I can't remember if he said Jokalo or Juggalo.
Oh, anyways, Juggalo.
Yeah, he was making it like it was a Juggalo.
Yeah, I think I've read I posted a thing under it of the funniest tweets at tweet reaction. Somebody said he looks like he fell into a vat of Hot Topic.
That's not bad either.
But what do you think? Do we care? Do we really know that much from a photo? What is it going to mean for the movie? Do we even want to see the movie?
Well, another take I heard, and I actually kind of like this, is so like all of those are like prison tats. And the reason like he has a fake grill is because he had his teeth knocked out from all of his encounters with Batman. And so it's kind of like this older Joker that's been through the prison system and has kind of become more and more insane.
Been around.
And specifically, yeah. Like the ha ha ha's on his arm.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the same kind of lettering that they have in the Lee Bermejo and Brian Azzarello Joker story.
Right.
Which is a very, it's from kind of his perspective, but it's kind of it's in its own world. And Joker is like always popping pills. And it's kind of a cool take on the character. This one, I don't know. I bitched a lot about Heath Ledger.
Right.
And so I feel really afraid to say anything. Like, uh-huh. I'm to be honest, I'm like, do I have a say in this? I don't think I do. But I mean, as a comic book, I guess just guy, I think at least it's a different take. I think that's sort of interesting. I don't really mind that it's going off in this different direction. And if it is a little bit more, if these are like really intricate layers about him being in prison and like uh-huh. this kind of like built in history to the character, that is cool. Now, right. If it's just like stylistic, like whatever baloney, then it could be bad. It all comes down to how he's portrayed in the movie. Like,
I think, you know, if we're going to connect this back to Batman, this is for the Suicide Squad movie, which Batman probably won't have an appearance in. Maybe, who
knows? There's been rumors.
There's been rumors, but, yeah, I mean, basically, he's not the star of the show.
Yeah.
But if this is connected to Batman, I think we can, at this point, we can kind of compare, because there's been so many iterations, we can kind of compare Batman to Bond in a way. And, like, the Bond movies always oscillate from campy to serious, back to campy again, back to serious, over and over and over again. The character's going to live forever. Mm-hmm. We can pretty much guarantee that. It's a franchise that's never died. But
well, and if it has died, it's come back. It's been
yeah, and it comes and back, so. And there's enough material out there that people can keep reinterpreting it for a new generation. And I think we're going to see the same thing with Batman. So I think, given that Snyder is sort of at the helm of DC at this moment, mm-hmm. I mean, if Kevin Feige is sort of showrunning Marvel, Snyder's kind of the equivalent now for DC, for better or worse. I think, based upon this picture, what we know about the Suicide Squad, the fact that they're even doing a Suicide Squad movie, really, which is already pretty high concept.
And, I mean, David Ayer's involvement, which, I mean...
Basically, you know, what we've seen from David Ayer, maybe we haven't seen enough to really have an opinion, but his movies are actually fairly grounded.
Well, besides his movies being grounded, he has a grittier style, but, like, seems like it's going to be a dark cartoon.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Is I think that Snyder's vision for DC and for Marvel, or not Marvel, for DC and for Batman, because we're seeing the trailer from Batman versus Superman, which looks a little bit more cartoony, definitely much more like the comic book in that it looks like it was ripped out of the comic book, you know, less trying to naturalize things like Nolan's universe did. I think we're oscillating back to campy in some ways, and it could get us back to about Burton level to start out with. But I wouldn't be surprised if about three or four movies in, we're going to start heading back towards Schumacher level, and then it'll go back again.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's an interesting, theory. It makes a lot of sense, too, I think, especially comparing it to the Bond model.
Mm-hmm. We're not quite at a World's Not Enough yet.
Right.
But we might be at about... what was the one with Terry Hatcher? Came out right after GoldenEye.
I don't remember. I've never been a huge Bond aficionado, really. So you're asking the
I think we might be stepping in about that direction. Like, we're in the, it's definitely pretty hyper-realistic now. But, you know, that might not necessarily be a bad thing. I mean, one of the things that's really popular that a lot of people know Batman stuff from is those video games, those Arkham games, which are not realistic.
No, and I think that there is room to not be realistic. And I mean, comics, we've done the realistic. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's bad. It's just, it's stop going with what's popular and do what's best for the story you're telling.
Right.
And that's really what I guess I want to see with these kind of films is I don't care if you do a space opera with Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. Just make it appropriate to the style you're doing. Tell the right story with it, you know?
Right, right. Also, now the studio's backing off and saying, no, that was just for shits and giggles. Like, we didn't mean it. Right. So who knows, and who cares, really?
I kind of hope they don't. Like, I mean, if you're going to make something like that, just, you know, go full. And maybe it was, like, kind of trying to find the character, especially after it. I mean, let's be real. There are people who will... The only reason they even like the Batman movies in general is because of Heath Ledger's performance in The Dark Knight. Like, really.
Absolutely.
And it is...
Well, no. I disagreed with you without really hearing what you said. No, I think there's other good things about those movies. I think people like that take for a lot
of reasons. Oh, no. I'm saying not me. I don't think in general. I'm saying for there are a set of people that are like that.
Yeah, there is...
I think that there is a group. There's a subset
who thinks it's all about Heath Ledger and...
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't even see Batman Begins.
Yeah, and I personally, I liked all of the films. So, I mean, I'm not talking about my opinion. I'm saying that there is a subset of people have that opinion. And it is an iconic version of the character. Mm-hmm. And I mean, talking from both experiences and, you know, knowing each other for a while, I know it blew your mind hole as much as it blew my mind hole.
Oh,
His performance specifically. I didn't see it coming. And so I'm not saying that this is going to be, but I do know that they have to work with it and try to, I guess, workshop it to find a good fit and to try to, you know, it's not even about, you know.
So is Twitter upping the new focus group?
yeah, I really think so. I mean, even if you think about, I even think to some degree with a lot of these big movies that they're trying to do, like global worldwide box office hits.
Yeah.
I obviously think that they kind of leak stuff to try to kind of get people's reactions ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll call that a pet topic because it felt like one to me.
Okay.
And let's go ahead and get into the movies for this week. I'm going to review Unfriended, which you did not see.
No, I didn't. Did not see that.
But you were kind of like vaguely interested, weren't you?
Well,
it's a popular horror movie.
It's a horror movie, and besides that, I mean, we were in the middle of, like, some pretty dead weeks, and they wouldn't let me watch Ex Machina, so I was like, well, the lesser of all the evils.
Right, yeah. Right. But you ended up not having to do that. But I did. I took the bullet. Unfriended is the first cybernatural movie. How do you like that? Actually, that was the original going title for the movie.
Cybernatural.
And it probably isn't. Actually, but it's probably not the first. But it's directed by Levin Gabriadze. I think it's Spanish. Maybe you can take a crack at it. But the plot is that there is a group of friends, about five or six friends, who hang out online after school one day. Or I suppose after school. We don't really know much about these characters before they log on because everything that happens in the movie takes place on a computer screen. The frame of the film, the frame of the window that we're seeing everything through, you know, the proverbial frame, is a computer screen of an Apple computer. They're logged on to Skype, much like me and you are right now. And they're having kind of a big group chat, and they keep seeing this window pop up with a blank, you know, no picture on it. And they can't find any information on it. For some reason, all their computers are glitching. They can't log the person off or kick them out of the conversation. And they keep getting these mysterious messages from an old Facebook account of a friend of theirs that committed suicide the year before after, a terrible cyberbullying thing where she was videoed drunk and had soiled herself at a party. So they're getting all these messages, and of course they think, oh, it's some troll or some hacker or whatever, we'll get rid of them eventually. But things just keep getting weirder and weirder and escalating further and further. And this Skype call, which basically we're watching in real time, there's no jumps in the timeline, starts getting crazier and crazier. People start disappearing, start hearing gunshots in the background, and becomes impossible to talk to people. And our main character, whose name is Blair Lilly, played by Shelley Hennig, she's whose computer we're seeing everything through. And it's kind of interesting. We just watched the film Locke in our film reviewing class, which was another movie that put extreme limiters on.
Oh, the one with Tom Hardy.
With correct. Tom Hardy. It came out last year where Tom Hardy's in a car.
Okay.
And there's, again, very few time jumps. We're kind of seeing everything in real time. And it's, you know, it's committed to him in a car and it never leaves the car. And I just watched this movie, I think, just right before the class. And so I was thinking about both, like, how they apply limiters to what they do. And here, it's an interesting experiment. You know, in my review that I wrote for the Idaho State Journal, I also bring up Blair Witch Project, because back in, what was that, 2001? 2002, maybe?
I thought it was earlier than that.
It might have been,
the sequel was.
We were in high school. 2001. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to place it. Maybe it was like 99. The Blair Witch Project was this huge fat deal because everyone kind of maybe thought it was real, and we'd never seen found footage like that before. Of course, they'd kind of done stuff like that back in the 70s with like Mondo films, but nobody had really seen those movies. But, the issue here is twofold. One, it's just not scary. You know, interesting, totally modern. In a way, like it's trying something I've never seen before and, you know, really commits to this conceit all the way through. And I commend it for doing that, you know, for being that bold and experimental, in a kind of a fun poppy way. It's not like, experimental in like an Andy Warhol, Kenneth Anger way, but it's, just not that effective as a horror film, and you don't really get to know any of these characters. You know, the character we get to know the most is the main character, played by Shelley Hennig, because we don't. And it's kind of an interesting way to build character development, at least from this one perspective. But you know, we kind of have an idea of how she thinks and how she problem solves by how she Googles and clicks. And when she decides to look things up, and when she's doing something on one browser, but chooses not to tell everyone that that's what she's doing, or out and out is lying, just to protect herself. And so there's an interesting thing there with how you can get a lot about how she thinks as a person based upon the way she uses this computer. But the other people, all the rest of the cast, these people are getting picked off one by one by this Skype ghost, we don't know anything about, because we only see them through these tiny little windows every once in a while, and they log off and log on, and we get almost no perspective of what they are. They're just kind of along for the ride. And so you're not really invested in any of their lives or deaths. And on top of that, because of the limiters, the deaths can only be so scary. And it's mostly a lot of jump scares, honestly. Also, I'm not sure if I call this a movie. That was the other thing I wrote, is I'm like, it's interesting, it's forward thinking, but is this cinema? I don't know if it is anymore. I think at this point, this is almost something else. Something new, maybe a video experiment, or something kind of like more like a YouTube clip. But I don't know if I'd really call this a movie in the traditional sense, because there's no film language.
Well, I mean, I guess in the way you're kind of taking on it too, is it's interesting because it is kind of involving kind of our digital world. So
thematically, it kind of makes a lot of sense, because the whole story is about things you've done in your past come back to haunt you, which is an old slasher movie trope.
Well, isn't, Wasn't there something kind of like that? I mean, it went into real time and it kind of played with the timeline, but I thought they did something like that in VHS.
They kind of approached stuff like this. I mean, there was...
There was one where I thought they were, like, Skyping back and forth and, like...
Yeah, there was one kind of like this, now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah!
So that's what I was thinking. Also, a lot of these, like the newer horror films, too, it seems like, often are come from shorts. So I don't know if this came from a short or not.
It feels like it. And it also feels like it would have worked better as a short. Like, you know, it's not a long movie. It's like 83 right. minutes. But you feel every minute of it because there's just these long stretches where they have to pad it with stuff while she's Googling and, like, listening to music and waiting for people to respond and that kind of stuff. And, oh, what was that? Or why am I getting these messages? Or are you sure you're not joking? And there's just a lot of that. And it starts to feel like rinse and repeat over and over again, the same kind of conversations.
Hmm.
And it's, I guess, done so in a somewhat realistic way. But, I mean, I'll say this to end this rant, this really muddled review. I was so bored at one point that backhanded compliment, maybe, I was in that how believable it was as an actual computer screen. But I was actually looking at the edges of the computer screen for the clock to find out what time it was. And before I realized, oh, yeah, this is a movie, so that wouldn't be accurate.
Well, but that's a weird thing that...
And that's also when I decided maybe this isn't a movie.
Okay, one... it is kind of a weird thing that directors are planning for now when they do their films is not how it's going to be received in the cinema, but how it's going to look on other screens.
Right.
So that's sort of weird.
Maybe this would be more effective watching in your room with the lights off on a laptop.
Maybe. But two, talking about the digital age, the director is... According to IMDb, Russian.
Okay. Does that mean something?
No, it's just, it was a Snowden weird segue.
Or
yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, I think I was going to mention, the whole motif of the past coming back to haunt you kind of has an interesting context in this digital world, because now that everything's documented all the time, and, you know, the information age and all of that kind of stuff, your past can literally come back in the form of videos or, you know, you make a cheap, basement porno. And then 40 years later, you didn't think that video would ever surface again. And then it ends up like ruining your political career.
Right. I was going to say, or when you give your, information to a crazy person and they take it and they exploit it because you made fun of them and through a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
I'm going to write that
story.
Yeah, I'm going to wait till it happens to you and then I'm going to exploit your pain.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, let's go ahead and get into Ex Machina then.
Oh, can we?
And I'll let you set that up. What happens in Ex Machina?
Basically a programmer played by Domhnall Gleeson, Caleb. He wins this lucky lottery, baloney, whatever thing to go stay out.
And he gets Willy Wonka'd.
Yeah, he gets Willy Wonka'd. That's a good point. To go stay with crazy Oscar Isaac, who lets you know that he's created AI and he's letting this Domhnall Gleeson do a Turing test on him to see if it's actually AI or if it's just a really good program. Now that sounds like it could be like a billion movies,
right?
From the setup, but this is what makes it actually truly unique and very smart. And first of all, it's written and directed by Alex Garland. We've seen tons of stuff by him,
right?
Written by him, but never directed. This is the first thing he's directed. Mm-hmm. Now I will say that this feels like it feels a lot like that clone movie that was really good too. I forgot what it was called. I always forget what it's called.
Splice?
No. No, the one he wrote. He didn't write Splice.
Oh, no, okay. Never Let Me Go.
Never Let Me Go. That's the one.
Yeah, which I forgot who directed that. It was a music video guy.
Oh, well, but it anyways, but some of the other things, you know, like Sunshine and 28 Days Later, you can feel that DNA. He knows when he writes visually.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure directors pull straight from his scripts because he's good at what he does. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it still shows in his first thing he's directed.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked it. I liked how it looked. There was a very natural take, of course, and I prefer more cinematic, but this was very well done for what it was trying to do. The one thing in this that I haven't seen in the other stuff he's written is just a weird sense of humor. It made me laugh a lot.
Yeah.
And
specifically Oscar Isaac.
Yeah. And but it was funny because he was kind of intimidating, but funny, but like, okay, this movie is kind of blew my mind. I loved it. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to get it out there so I don't have to dance around it anymore. I don't, however, it talks a lot about AI and what it is to be human. And you may or may not find out that Domhnall Gleeson is a robot. But either way, it played with me so much and my emotions and what I thought about this that... I thought it was great, but I still kind of haven't put a lot of context to it because it sort of has this weird biblical feel too, because your lead robot is Eva. They have, one of the other the robots that they show like intermittently is named Lily, which, is
one
old,
of the other
like,
models before Eva. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you get this weird, like Adam and Eve kind of story, but then you got like Bluebeard happening and you've got all sorts of stuff. It's
maybe
very
a little, Blade Runner in there.
Yeah. Oh, easily Philip K. Dick. Easy peasy. However, this movie, I'm going to have to see again because I don't know what it was trying to get across.
Okay.
But it was good.
Regardless.
Yeah, it was still a great, like, as just a movie, like, just the plot unfolding in this thriller. And it was actually scary. You could almost argue there's kind of a lot of horror elements in this that work very, very effectively.
It's unnerving. There's definitely an atmosphere that runs all the way through, even when it's really funny, which is a lot of the time because, mostly because of Oscar Isaac's performance, which I think this is nominatable.
Well, this is the thing about Oscar Isaac is I love him, and this is making me love him more, this movie, because he was funny, but terrifying, but
it's a great combination of material and actor
and performance, right?
And performance, yeah.
I can't gush enough. This is the movie everybody should have been seeing for the last 3 weeks.
Well, they're talking about expanding it because it's doing pretty well limited. And I hope they do because I think, you know, this is kind of a low or a mid budget, but sort of a mellower genre film. It's not, you know, explosion a minute, you know, that kind of thing. It's not like Chappie or Age of Ultron, which also is somewhat about AI.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's a lot here that your average moviegoer who's into genre stuff can enjoy. You know, even if it's
it's
maybe
not super...
a little headier than your average blockbuster, but I think this could play wide pretty well.
Oh, I think that the general plot is really fun and it flows well.
And the performances
it's a
really
sci-fi
strong.
Thriller. The performances are great. Everything that you're saying, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't gush. Just go see it. I wish I could tell you more about it, but I couldn't dissect it because there was so many things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a distraction, and there's something happening there.
Well,
I'm just not sure what.
Let me take a crack at it.
Go for it.
And you might roll your eyes because I feel like the subject's come up a lot lately. But I can't help but see and say I think there's a strong feminist allegory here.
Okay.
Especially when they talk about the meaning of gender and what gender means. And why would Oscar Isaac purposely install a sexuality into this robot? And, you know, he kind of gets around all of this. So the writing is so good. I mean, Alex Garland is a writer first. So, you know, he's able to have these really long dialogue set pieces that's essentially all about exposition, but he's able to do so in a way that it pops and it crackles and it never feels like your vegetables. So you're always, you know, these actors are so good and their dialogue is so funny that you kind of, it allows for a lot of these bigger themes, I think, to kind of whiz by. And I think, you know, the notion of gender is brought up almost all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could see this. I don't want to give away the ending, but stuff happens. You could see it as kind of an empowerment message, about patriarchy. So there's that. I think you don't have to, you know.
Yeah, and it might be there. That might be it, because I think that, your argument is sound.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
you have to watch it under that, with that lens.
No, and I think that there's more too. Like, because there definitely is it's also a very loaded.
Right.
What is humanity?
What is sort of a creation myth, like you were talking about. Yeah. But I kind of thought this Oscar Isaac character is kind of like a weird mix between sort of a obsessive, Howard Hughes type.
Mm-hmm.
But also a little bit like a Mark Zuckerberg type, like more of a modern, you know, he's sort of like it's future Google or whatever.
Right.
That's what he owns. He's not really known for AI, but, you know, like Google's getting closer and closer to creating stuff like this, weirdly enough. You know, with Oculus Rift and all of this weird stuff, their technology they're putting out, and they absorb more and more. But there's almost a little bit there about, you know, possibly something about humanity or the lack thereof when it comes to being so unbelievably crazy rich and lonely. Loneliness is a huge theme in this movie, that maybe that is less human than actually being built and programmed by something or somebody else.
Well, again, that's the Bluebeard story.
Right, exactly.
Again, there is a lot going on. It's not only a very fun film, because I mean that. I think it is a fun, just genre.
I had
film.
A blast. Yeah, and from start to finish.
And then on top of that, there's something very smart going on that I still can't comprehend. I do, like, maybe I'm a little overexcited, but no, I felt like Stanley Kubrick DNA is in this kind of film.
Oh, yeah, role. And that was the thing I think that surprised me the most. I expected it to be written pretty well, mm-hmm. because Garland's a writer.
Right.
And it's split up into chapters, kind of in that Kubrickian way, but also it felt a lot like a novel. Mm-hmm. I could see reading this in each section, you know, each test is how they split it up, feels a lot like a chapter in a book. But I was not expecting it to be as visually sound as it was.
Right.
And it's, you know, we have something
like... There's a spectacular dance scene.
Right. Yeah. Which shouldn't work. For all intents and purposes, that scene should stick out like a sore thumb and be the thing that everybody... And if anyone hates this movie, they're probably going to point that thing out the most. But I think it weirdly works.
This might be this year's Under the Skin.
I mean, it's definitely in the running for best movie I've seen this year.
Oh, easy peasy.
Easy, yeah. Easy. But I wanna find the cinematographer. I wanna give him a shout out because I think this movie looks really good.
There's definitely a realistic style, which, you know, I prefer, I don't know, more like not like German expressionism, that kind of like influence. Okay. I mean, that's like going way far back in the family tree, but I'm talking there's, you know, there's basically two ways of shooting something, that realistic style or that very film oriented style, but it does look great. I'm not debating that.
Rob Hardy is the name of the cinematographer. And I think there is a lot of style here. It's more of that cold, detached Kubrickian style.
Right.
I think it is certainly not, it doesn't look like a Dogma film, or it doesn't, you know, it doesn't look like Mumblecore.
No, but they are taking like the naturalistic approach to it. Not quite.
I suppose so.
Not quite.
There's kind of a steely sort of threatening aspect to the lighting and the set design. Oh, and, yeah. And if I will knock the movie a few pegs,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't necessarily surprised by any of the big twists or reveals. Whenever they would reveal something, I kind of saw it coming from a mile away. And it didn't ruin the movie for me because I still liked what they were doing and I still liked how they got there. But there was nothing you know, I think there were some reveals that were supposed to be bigger shocks than they actually were.
I don't know which ones you're speaking of. We'll have to talk in coded language because there are things that happen.
Right. Well, I'll just talk about one thing that I don't think ruins the movie. Okay. You know, as soon as he lands in on helicopter and meets Oscar Isaac, Oscar Isaac gives him this card that's going to take him, you know, it's an ID card that allows him to get into rooms. And he says, oh, yeah, well, you know, some of the rooms work and some of them don't. And it's good because it'll tell you which rooms you're supposed to be in, which rooms you're not supposed to be in without having to ask me. And it's not weird, blah, blah, blah. And that's, again, that great Alex Garland thing where he deals with exposition in a really naturalistic, funny way. But I was also thinking, okay, you're clearly not on the level. Like, you got something to hide. And I think that sort of thing.
But that builds the tension. Because this film does have a strong, like, this is violin level tension. Like, you can hear it in the background, even though it's not there. You're just like.
You're hearing the psycho violins?
Yeah. The thing is.
And he's like weirdly vain. He works out all the time. And like, but he's also like an alcoholic. There's a lot of character subtext there that we don't really know, but we can kind of build a lot just from his behavior.
But I mean, that's what's wonderful. Like, what's funny is this thing that you're like using to knock, it ended up going back to like compliment.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, my complaint is barely a complaint, but I'm just saying like, when things are revealed and the last half of the movie is all about reveals, there was nothing that I was like, what? You know, OMG, my head exploded. Like, I was like, yeah, okay, I could kind of see that coming based on the type of story it is.
Well, maybe I was just more gullible, but he was definitely playing with one of the characters and who they were.
Right.
And I think how it was unrevealed, I think it was masterful. I can't. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything to knock. I thought it was beautiful.
It's a great film. It's a great film. And I think I don't like talking about award stuff when it comes to movies that I think are probably just too good for awards.
This is our award.
But I think Oscar Isaac should get a nod for this. And I'm afraid he won't be because it'll be sort of forgotten by award season. But
he'll be in Star Wars. So we'll see. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it'll be one of those dark horses or something that gets thrown in there.
Oh, and Domhnall Gleeson is more and more, the more I see him pop up and stuff, I like him even more. And the female character, we're not saying Alicia Vikander? She, you know, she has the sort of the unwanted job of playing a robot,
robot and being kind of stoic. Sensual robots. For, but, like, being so minimalistic. It's so weird, but sort of scary, too.
She's very good in the movie.
Yeah.
And she...
Oh, I'm talking about
the design. To do everything in nuance, and she has to do everything... Except it's sort of a thankless role, but she has to do everything in nuance, and she has to make all of these very deliberate character choices that, without you know, spelling things out, and it's actually probably the toughest role in the movie to play because Domhnall Gleeson is just a proxy for the audience and, Oscar Isaac gets to play everything big. So she has the trickiest role and she does it very, very well.
Agreed.
It's great.
My notes were on the actual design because like I said, there is something to be said about the weird minimalistic, just sensuality. Like, not Geiger, but influenced by him, kind of. It doesn't look anything like Geiger's stuff, but it has this weird sense about it, and I just the whole movie, just, kind of wrapping my head around it. Anyways, much more of a gush than a review, but I'm okay with that. I think it was deserving.
Yeah, it's nice to see good movies. I like doing that every once in a while.
Now to talk about the
We're not going to be watching or doing a Netflix homework this week because of my life. And we're going to hold the hunt for the week after next, because next week we're going to have Leland Brungart from Dampercast back on the show to do our big Avengers Marvel blowout. And he has assigned to us the comedy They Came Together, which was just added to the Netflix recently.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be talking about that next week, and we'll hold the hunt for the week after. But if anyone has anything to say about anything we talked about today, what's your opinion on Jared Leto Joker? What's your opinion on Unfriended, Ex Machina, or anything that we might talk about next week with the Marvel movies, Avengers movie? What's your favorite Marvel movie? There's a many different letters you could send us, and you can do so at our email, jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or Pocket Cast or the Windows Podcast Network. And if you're on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a star rating and a one sentence review because it helps people find the show. You can read my reviews that I do every week at the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read some other reviews and articles I've written for the Seattle-based website, MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And you can find Richard over at his blog, rdwally.weebly.com.
Not a blog, just a website.
Be sure to listen to Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa over at their podcast, Quarter Life Crisis, at quartercrisis.podbean.com. And go ahead and check out Dampercast at dampercast.com before he comes on next week to wrap comic books and Marvel and geek out with us.
And then after you've done every single one of those things, go see Ex Machina. Now, go.
I think you liked it.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.